So I was sitting in my cubicle today and I realized ever since I started working, every single day of my life has been worse than the day before it. So that means that every single day that you see me, that's on the worst day of my life.
Don't you know? That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang.
You load the 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt.
Take this job and shove it.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
At the end of the workday, everyone needs to unwind. This is After Hours. A show about Regina and what goes on out of the 9 to 5. With your host, Julianne Johnston. This is After Hours.
Welcome to After Hours. I'm your host, Julianne Johnston. Is there life in Regina outside business hours? Well, there's more than you'd think. Some people are volunteering, some are taking classes, and others are dealing with addiction. Our first story features a language you won't hear a lot of around the streets of Regina. Dansi, that's hello in Cree. And what you just heard is a group of language learners playing cards. Games are often played at the First Nations Languages Speaking Circle at the Albert Library in Regina. First Nations languages in Canada are being lost at an alarming rate, but After Hours' Raquel Fletcher discovered that learning Dene, Cree, or Ojibwe is as easy as a game of Go Fish. She joins us now in studio to tell us why she thinks every Saskatchewan resident should learn a First Nations language. Hi, Raquel.
Hi, Julianne.
So tell us a little bit about the Speaking Circle. How did it get started?
Well, the program got started last January. It was started by a woman named Kathy Wheaton, and she was concerned about how fast First Nations languages were disappearing in Canada. A lot of what you're going to find there is just speaking with one another or playing games just to get people speaking the language.
So how successful has the First Nations Language Speaking Circle been so far?
Well, the turnout has been inconsistent. I spoke with the organizer, Natalie Owl, who discussed some of the challenges for Aboriginals learning their native languages.
Because of the residential school system, that historically has removed children from their homes, so you've lost culture, you've lost language. So I think there's been that loss and, you know, I think a sense of frustration over that loss. And I think that for some people, you know, that's a barrier because they feel ashamed about that, that they've lost it or that they don't speak it.
What do those who have been out on Tuesday nights say about it?
One man I talked to has been going every week since the program started. His name's Dave Phillips, and here's what he has to say.
You know, like, what is Canadian culture? Canadian culture is Aboriginal. Everything else has been imported, I think, to be Canadian. Requires you to have some connection with the people that were here when we got here.
I also spoke with Solomon Ratt, who is the acting department head of Indian Languages, Literatures, and Linguistics at the First Nations University of Canada here in Regina. We discussed the importance of learning the language in order to appreciate First Nations culture.
He's been the world.
People who come to university know very little about Canadian history and their involvement with the First Nations of Canada. Very few people know what happened with the residential school systems. So the more education we have, the better understanding we'll have of each other.
So what do you think needs to be done to get more people to come out to this circle? Is there enough interest out there to see a good turnout?
Absolutely. There are a lot of people who want to learn a First Nations language, whether they are of Aboriginal descent or not. Solomon Ratt said the majority of people in the introductory level Cree classes he teaches at the university are not Aboriginal. So there is a very wide interest out there if the program can get the word out. And if you've never been to the Albert Library, it's on 1401 Robinson Street, just a block north of Dewney Avenue. It's a beautiful library. It's got a lot of really neat artwork inside, and it's a great setting for a program like this.
Well, thanks for that, Raquel.
Thank you, Julianne.
And I hope that encourages some people to head over to Albert Library. The speaking circle is every Tuesday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Been listening to an original song performed by Bill Cook, a Cree language instructor at the First Nations University. He's also a regular instructor at the Speaking Circle, and the song we just heard is called Mother. Next, another after-hours activity, and it happens right here on campus. It's Monday Night Salsa. I attended a few of the Monday Night Salsas here, and the night pretty much starts with a lesson from instructor Christian Pineda for all those who need the basics. And obviously, in order to participate, you do need the basics. So I talked with a few people, took a lesson myself, and made a soundscape to explore what went on.
What is salsa?
It's important because there's nothing else like it here in Regina.
Salsa, it's everywhere, in the movies, TV, clubs, music videos.
I got a question, who has never taken salsa before, or at least one class?
Taking one class?
I'll do one of you the basics, two basic steps, and I'll teach you some new stuff too, okay? Salsa's count is divided into 8 counts, okay? I'm gonna count the 1, 2, 3, our 4 is a pause, and the 5, 6, 7, and the 8 is a pause, okay?
Yeah, we've done ballroom for years.
5, 6, 7. Again, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. One more time. 1, 2, 3.
Salsa's a little bit different. It's a little more relaxed, not quite so structured and so strict.
Put it all together, you step forward, you step left, tap right, back to the middle. Tap right, tap left, to the middle.
Once you get into salsa, it pretty much takes over your life.
My choice is salsa, that's what I do.
We love both, but we're really getting into salsa now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Again. 1, 2, 3.
Doesn't all that Spanish music just want to make you move your hips in your seat? At any rate, I think it's about time for a break. Don't change the station, though. We've got lots ahead for you. We'll hear about online gambling, and we'll also find out what some Reginans are doing for Africa. Sit tight, we'll be back in a few.
Oh.
No matter what you do in your after hours, be safe. Don't drink and drive.
Sometimes when I'm in a social setting, I get really nervous. And I'll take a moment to just go to the bathroom, even if I don't have to, and just breathe. And
sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and I go to the bathroom and I piss all over the bathroom and don't realize till I wake up the next morning.
I play Pokemon.
I like to read pornos while I'm on freight trains.
I sit in my room naked and play any game that's around.
I used to go over to my friend's mom's house for tea so we could watch out the window and watch the firefighters train with their shirts off in the street.
I will on occasion take hallucinogenic substances and then run naked through forests.
I dress up like a dude sometimes.
I like to smoke a lot of pot.
I dress up like a superhero in public.
Okay, I like to sit down and talk to strangers and tell them everything about me.
Sometimes I straighten my hair. Straightening iron.
Not a lot of people know this, but I vastly prefer a bathtub over the shower. And I have a bath every night before I go to bed.
Those streeters were thanks to Leila Baudouin. For some, their dirty little secret is something we're going to hear about next. Our reporter Barb Woolsey found out more for us on a few unconventional topics. First, online gambling is becoming much more popular. Some people do it as a hobby or in their spare time. Others deal with it as an addiction. Barb explored a little bit more about this phenomenon in the form of a soundscape.
Gambling is a loose term. Poker.
The first time when I started, and I was deciding whether or not I wanted to play for a living or not. It was kind of like make or break right there. I ended up making 10,000.
It started out like once a week, twice a week, and it's turned into every day, and usually about 7 o'clock I'd go start playing cards and play till 1, 2, 3 in the morning.
I don't know, usually average like 3 hours a day. This is PokerStars.com.
PokerStars.com, home world champions.
You end up playing like 20 hands in 1 hour. And when you're playing live and it's just like so slow. And then here you can play up to like 1,000 hands an hour. If you're looking to make more money, all the money is online.
Online poker is a totally different world. I don't like it. There's no human interaction, and there's a lot of cheaters on the internet.
The average person that goes on here is gonna lose.
$6 billion a year business.
Compulsive gamblers.
Instant gratification.
I lost more than I'd ever be willing to admit.
I was playing against a weaker player. I played him for about 4 hours and ended up losing about $55,000. I felt numb.
You got to know when to hold. Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away, know when to run.
A hobby is fun, an addiction isn't. I stopped winning, and I stopped playing because it wasn't fun anymore. When the dealing's
done. Next, they're called people who beat people, and they're also known as BDSMers. That loosely stands for bondage, discipline, dominance, and submission. Now, this type of lifestyle often comes with negative connotations. It's not something that's openly accepted, but the community in Regina is actually growing. There are quite a few people experimenting with bondage and discipline, often in secret. However, because of the bad rap, excuse the pun, that BDSM gets, are people able to practice it safely? So Barb, what else can you tell us about BDSM?
Every person that practices BDSM subscribes to a different definition of the term. In its purest meaning, BDSM is a form of consensual sexual play between two people that mixes pain and pleasure. BDSM is an acronym, and it can stand for bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, or sadomasochism, depending on how an individual identifies.
So what kinds of things can an individual identify with?
What it really comes down to is taste. Some BDSMers don't like sadomasochism and they identify more with bondage and discipline play. Some are actually really into the kink and they live their roles full time. You see, there are masters and there are slaves, and the slaves are completely obedient to their masters.
So if some of these people are living their roles full-time, it's not all sexual?
No, absolutely not. It's a lifestyle. There are even masters who make their slaves sign contracts. And if a slave chooses to leave before the contract is up, there are penalties.
Wow, Barb. I'm not quite sure what to say. That's pretty strange.
I have to admit, when I was investigating BDSM, it was all a new sort of world to me, but this is a lifestyle that definitely has a niche in Regina's underground. The community holds a BDSM supper, they call it a munch, on the first Saturday of every month.
So how did you find out about the BDSM scene?
Well, originally I wanted to do a story about swingers, so I put up some postings online, and one of the first replies was from a 50-year-old man named Kelly. He's been in a relationship for 6 years with a woman named Dee, and they enjoy the swing lifestyle. However, they're a little bit different. A lot of swingers aren't into kink, but Dee and Kelly, or Master Kelly as he refers to himself, enjoy BDSM and dominant submissive play.
Okay, interesting. So take us to the beginning then. How do you become a BDSMer?
Well, Dee's story is extremely interesting. As a teenager, she accidentally saw a bondage party her grandfather was hosting. She was curious and decided to try it for herself. Kelly's story is actually a little bit more complicated. He began practicing BDSM with his ex-wife. Kelly was actually the submissive in the relationship. However, things became abusive. The final straw was when he was raped by two men on the orders of his ex-wife. Since then, Kelly has actually become a dominant in relationships. He says that, you know, while that situation with his ex-wife was extremely hurtful, it's actually made him better at being a dominant.
Well, I would say the difference for me is I do tend to understand a little bit more what it's like to be on the receiving end. There's nothing I would do to anybody that I wouldn't have done to myself. My hard limits are very cut and dry. I know what I am willing to do, what I'm not willing to do.
Both Kelly and Dee are very open about their lifestyles. They hold these things that call demo parties, where they teach people how to properly flog, how to properly use ties and that sort of thing.
So what's it like for Kelly and Dee having to deal with the bad reputation that BDSMers usually have?
It's very difficult for them. Bondage gets tied up with all these other negative words like rape and abuse, when that's not what it's about at all. Kelly and Dee are very much in love, and they've made it very clear that pain in bondage is pleasurable, and the minute it is no longer pleasurable is the minute that you have to stop. There's a lot of concerns in the community about safety. To be in a dominant submissive relationship is to put complete trust into a person, and sometimes that person can abuse that trust.
I was with a dom for 5 years, and he was one of those. Could talk a very good game, could play a very good game, but in all actuality he was about hurting people.
So this is something people are interested in. How can they do it safely?
Well, there are golden rules to staying safe, and Kelly and Dee shared some with me. First, you never meet a new playmate in private, but first in public, and you get to know them this way. Never allow yourself to be bound unless you know and completely trust the person. Practice safe calls. Tell someone where you're going to be and what time you're going to be home, and if you're not home by that time, have them check up on you. Also using safe words. Kelly and Dee, they regularly get tested for STIs, and this is very important. They don't take on a new partner unless this partner shows proof that they've been tested. Kelly and Dee explained to me that the situation is getting better when it comes to safety, especially with the internet. The internet has revolutionized the BDSM lifestyle. People are finding each other, but they're also policing the community, warning each other about bad experiences and how to avoid them. The tools are definitely there to stay safe. So when it comes to BDSM, if people are curious, they need to do a lot of research and be careful who they trust.
Okay, you found some interesting stuff for us. Thanks for that, Barb.
Thanks very much, Julianne.
Well, it's time for After Hours to take another break, but stay tuned though. We'll be hearing about what engineers do when they're not engineering and some alternative modeling. Sounds like a bit of a mix? Well, it is.
The University of Regina's Walk Along program is a free service that offers any staff and students a safe walk to a car or anywhere on campus. So if you're on campus after hours, call 585-5600 or press the Walk Along button on campus payphones. Thank you.
Welcome back. There's long been a worldwide ambition to help solve Africa's problems. Now, whether it's stopping wars, ending famine, building schools, or sending money to World Vision, we're bombarded by images of Africa as a helpless continent. One group of volunteers at the University of Regina hopes to enact real change in Africa. Brian Rogers has the story.
Hey, is the poster good?
Engineers Without Borders is a group of student volunteers from university campuses across Canada. The group works with organizations in Canada and overseas to help with development and sustainability in Africa. Yasmin Soufi is the president of EWB for the University of Regina chapter. She stresses that EWB is not just an aid organization.
So in Canada, we focus on engaging Canadians in the government, our peers, other engineers, to become global citizens and to think about international development and problems and issues and kind of help from Canada.
Although most of the group's work is done on campuses, some members get opportunities to work outside of Canada. The Junior Fellowship is a four-month volunteer term on the ground in Africa. One or two members from each university chapter is sent to one of four African countries. In Africa, they work with programs and organizations, helping the average African reach better forms of sustainability. Vicky Nelson was the U of R's junior fellow in 2009. She spent 4 months in Zambia.
My placement was with International Development Enterprises. They do agriculture value chains. So what that means is that I was helping farmers connect them to their input suppliers like seeds and fertilizers, and then also helping connect them to markets, so where they can sell their vegetables.
Keith Arnstead has been chosen as the U of R's Junior Fellow for 2010. Arnstead is in his fourth year studying engineering. He will be going to either Zambia or Malawi this coming summer. In preparing for the trip, he is trying to change the negative perceptions people often have of Africa.
Too often what we hear in the media in Canada is AIDS, poverty, and famine in Africa. And really, it's a proud continent with hardworking, joyous people and lots of achievement. And so I think that really needs to get portrayed better.
Both Arnstead and Nelson said that if we continue to cast Africa as helpless, the country will remain that way. Although the group is called Engineers Without Borders, anybody from any discipline can join. Yasmin Soufi says the more diversity, the better. This has been Brian Rogers reporting for After Hours.
So our next story features a topic a lot of people aren't comfortable talking about, and that topic is pornography. Our reporter Leila Beaudoin is exploring the recent porn-demic and how porn on the internet is becoming more mainstream and culturally embedded every day. Leila, you investigated this multi-million dollar industry. Is porn becoming more culturally acceptable?
It's an extraordinary profitable business. Before porn seemed to be, hushed, no doubt many still do consider it dirty and to be prohibited altogether. But I found porn has grown into a semi-accepted part of life.
Semi-accepted? What do you mean?
It's fairly complicated, but a lot of people are identifying with porn. I spoke to Jenna Delaney, who is a part of the billion-dollar industry and actually lives here in Regina. She models on DeviantNation.com. But to find her, you would have to search under her DeviantNation name. She's known as Kisara.
Well, I've been involved with the alt-erotica sort of scene since I was 18. I'm 24 now, and DeviantNation wasn't the first site that I saw of its kind.
And so as you can see, Julianne, it isn't the typical pornographic site.
So what kind of women fit this criterion for deviant?
If you met Jenna, she just seems pretty normal. She's smart, has a great job, and great aspirations for the future. But she's still part of what's considered this deviant group.
It's experiencing something that most people might be scared to do. They're deviating a little bit from the norm because the girls are, tattooed and pierced and they've got attitude. But I think it's mostly like an attitude and a willingness to just kind of experience the whole thing.
Okay, I'm starting to see a clear picture of what the identity aspect is here.
I spoke with Darlene Jeshka, an associate professor in the Women's and Gender Studies program. Darlene described it to me. A lot of people think porn dehumanizes women by exploiting their sexuality. But she suggests the opposite. She thinks, really, it's a form of empowerment.
Taking and claiming their own sexuality is a good thing. It's always a good thing. We may not like the way that happens, but the point was to give women the choice.
But how is deviant porn really different from regular porn? What's the biggest difference you found?
It's their deviant nature, really. Jenna gave me a pretty good example.
A girl there, she's clothed, and she's got a bunch of posters of her favorite bands up, and she's got her headphones on, and she takes her clothes off. It's never dirty. It's more erotic.
So basically, if you're different from the standard, I guess you'd say blue-eyed blonde or long-legged brunette, you'd fit the deviant norm?
Well, no, not necessarily. There's a lot of blue-eyed blondes and long-legged brunettes, but they're alternative. I saw lots of pictures of women with funky-colored hair. It's kind of pin-up style meets punk. A lot of the websites use keywords like emo porn, punk porn, and bondage.
And did Jenna tell you exactly why she's involved?
Yeah, Jenna identifies with the site.
You know, I did it because I wanted the experience. I saw girls doing this, and I said to myself, you know, I could do that. I'm really into vintage, like, Pulp Fiction novels, 1940s and 50s styles, and it just really attracted me.
So, Layla, how many people follow these online sites?
Lots, Julianne. From teenage cell phone users to oil executives, Deviant Nation is just 7 years old, but has around 9,000 views a day. It's grown to be a big part of the internet pornography revenue, which, Julianne, is above $97 billion annually.
What kind of vibe did you get from exploring this issue?
Well, after speaking to Jenna and going through the site with her, I'm seeing porn in a totally different light. Darlene Jeschke says it's something to be accepted and better understood.
Claiming one's sexuality and then all the narratives that are out there and presented to us and ascertaining really what one is maybe liberative, fits me, and does what I, you know, want to do in and around sexuality. It's really, with the internet, it's wide open now, and I don't agree with censorship. I really don't. Sexuality is a hot topic, right? And I don't think I would ever name one sexuality as good and one as bad.
All right. Thanks for exploring this for us, Layla. I think we got a little bit more insight into the subject.
No problem, Julianne.
We all dream of that day when we leave work for the last time and say goodbye to tension, hello to pension. But do you ever wonder, what are you going to be doing with your time then? After Hours reporter Courtney Mintenko looked into what was going on with the seniors at the center on Winnipeg Street. What she found was a thriving community.
A 2005 study found that people who have a strong sense of community are more likely to report being in good physical and mental health. Walking into a senior center, there are many people who prove this study is true. Sylvia Pickett and Calvin Perry are two members of Regina Senior Citizen Center. Both began attending the facility for exercise.
The exercises. That's when I started doing that. I was going to Aquasize. And it's farther away, and like I live only a block from here, so it's practical for me to come.
Well, I get a bit of exercise. That's the nice part of pool. I live right next door in Embry Heights, so it's handy. But I go south for the winter, 200 feet south.
But Sylvia and Calvin, and other center members, benefit from more than just the physical exercise the center offers. Fellowship and friendship are just some of the benefits that lead to good mental health. Pickett has felt the benefits since she started going to the center 7 years ago.
You see other people and talk to people. It's good for you. It's not good for you to stay home watch TV. I think it's a good center. I enjoy coming here.
With seniors facing challenges later in life, like health problems or losing a spouse, it's important that they have a community to lean on. Courtney Mintenko with After Hours.
Thanks, Courtney. Well, we're out of time. Tune in next week for more stories and explorations about what people are doing outside the norm. Our reporters this week included Raquel Fletcher, Leila Beaudoin, and Barb Woolsey. Producer was Brian Rogers, and assistant producer was Courtney Mintenko. And I'm your host, Julianne Johnston. This has been After Hours.